The combine is over and the NFL draft is steamrolling ahead as we get ready to get there. Free agency gets started in a week and we've got our first trade to talk about, right? Travis May is going to come on to break down the combine and more with myself and Shane coming up next on the Draft Countdown Podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to tonight's edition of the Draft Countdown Podcast. I'm your co-host, Brian Bosarge. Joined, as always, is my co-host, Shane P. Hallam. Shane, 49 days, 22 hours, 58 minutes, 16 seconds away from the 2024 NFL Draft.
I feel like we cleared the last big hurdle here, Brian, with the combine behind us this past weekend. It's really smooth sailing here, pro days and gathering that information. But now it's about ear to the ground, seeing what teams doing free agency and going from there.
Spreadsheet season, like I said in the chat the other day, for me, for sure. It's where I'll be living a lot the next 7 weeks before the draft. Yep, 7 weeks away, man. It's wild. And pro days have already started. I think Indiana had theirs. Ball State had theirs. It's crazy. The combine just ended on Sunday. We're already into pro days. The big one, I think, coming up is what, a week from today, is Georgia's. Is that right?
Yeah.
So, and that's pretty big because, you know, that's where we're hopefully going to see Amarius Mims work out after he came up lame in the 40 the other day at the combine. Travis May is going to come on in just a little bit and talk about the combine and much more. But if you're watching live on YouTube, and you got a question that you want answered, either for Travis or us later at the end of the show, drop it in the chat right now. If you're following along on Twitter, leave us a question there at Draft Countdown, and we'll answer it at the end of the show. Or if you have a question and you're a member of our Discord, leave it a question there. We will answer it as well. Or if you're not a member of our Discord, go to draftcountdown.com, top right corner in the search bar. There is a link to join. Come in, join us, talk about it. And a lot of talk about the NCAA or College Football 25 video game in the chat a lot here lately. Everybody's super pumped.
I'm excited. I can't wait. I'll be morning of, waking up early, going to whatever store still sells video games and buying it. So
just digitally download that thing, man. That's what all
I want the physical copy forever. And I'm glad I still have NCAA 14 because I've still played that for the past 10 years.
That's wild to me. All right. But you know what else is wild? Is we had a trade. A huge trade. Earth-shattering trade in the NFL. The Chicago Bears have acquired swing lineman Ryan Bates from the Buffalo Bills in exchange for a 2024 fifth-round draft pick.
Look, that's all, you know, the combine GMs are talking. This is the big trade that gets done. The fifth-round draft pick for a guy that may, you know, he could compete to start on the Bears offensive line, but I don't know. I guess sometimes that's where it starts. Yeah, I was watching some people, you know, posted some stuff on Twitter and highlights, and it didn't look too bad. It was maybe not a bad deal, but I don't know. The Bills seem to be dumping everything under the sun here.
That is a fact. They are moving on from a lot of contracts here in the last 12 hours, it seems. That's not all trades conceived are good trades. We're going to talk about that in just a second. But the aftermath of this for the Bears, and for now, they currently only have 5 draft picks. Now they have 2 in the first, 1 and 9. They have a third, the 75th pick, and 2 fours, 111 and 123. Now, the assumption is they will add to those coffers with a trade for Justin Fields, right?
I don't know how many picks they're going to add, though. I mean, 1, maybe 2, maybe 2. You know, it's not going to be like a ton more. And I think they're already hurting a little bit on the pick side. But we'll see. They definitely have done some wheeling and dealing in the past and moving down some other spots. So it wouldn't surprise me if they move down from 9, if at some point maybe even to gather more picks there as well.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that could be a move where they move back maybe further down into the first round, like into that late teens, early 20s range to pick up that second round pick, you know, in a move back scenario. So that could be something to look at. All right. So a couple of releases have happened in the last couple of days, and it begs the question, Shane, what was the worst trade acquisition? The Broncos acquiring Russell Wilson? Or the Seahawks acquiring safety Jamal Adams?
It's tough. I mean, the Seahawks are on both sides of this, but both are really bad.
Let me break down the parameters here, the listeners get. And if you're in the chat, you tell us which one was worse when I get through reading this here. So for Denver to acquire Russell Wilson, this is not counting the massive amount of money that they paid, over $100 million, right? They paid out to Russell Wilson. And the largest dead cap hit in NFL history at $83 million. It actually consumed the next 2 dead cap hits about like $3 million. But they gave up 2 ones, 2 twos, a 5th, and 3 players, including Noah Fant, to Seattle. I think a 4th did come back in that trade. To get Russell Wilson, who went 9-10, I think, as a starter with the Broncos. For Seattle to acquire Jamal Adams from the Jets, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. They gave up picks 23 and 86. So that's a 1 and a 3 and 21, which turned out to be ended up being – these were Vikings picks, so I guess did a trade happen there with the Jets and the Vikings?
The Jets moved up with some of those picks.
Yeah, so those picks ended up turning into Christian Darrisaw and an offensive tackle and Wyatt Davis off guard, and then they gave up a pick that ended up being the 10th pick in 22, which turned into Garrett Wilson.
Yeah, I would say the Jamal Adams trade was worse because you're trading for a safety. Jamal Adams wasn't going to make that difference, even if he was great. You know, he wasn't going to make that difference to give up, like you said, what ended up being capital to move up plus what ended up being a 10th overall pick in the draft. I think Russell Wilson got a bit of a raw deal. Like I think he was pretty good last year, and you know Sean Payton hated him and they benched him so they wouldn't have to pay him, and like yeah, maybe had one of the worst head coaches of all time and Hackett the year before. Like it's kind of a raw deal for Wilson. Maybe it wasn't the best move. Somehow the GM for the Broncos, Patton, still has his job, so he's still employed there.
Yeah, that's a wonderment of how that is still a thing. Sean Payton, for sure, he better get it on, get it fixed here pretty quick, or you know he's going to be getting that sweet buyout money too, right?
Yeah, I was going to say he's not going to mind. He gets a nice check.
What's interesting here, and could be interesting for you as a Steelers fan here, right? Is the fact that Russell Wilson has, what is it, offset language in that money he's owed, right? So he almost may be inclined to take a vet minimum type deal.
Yeah. That's what it's going to be. It's going to have to be. He has to take $1 million. That's it.
Yeah. So, and then that way Denver has to pay out the rest of that $39 million or whatever he's owed. And so that helps out. I mean, that makes it pretty attractive, right? As a free agent quarterback.
I think it's a no-brainer for a team like the Steelers, for a team that is set up and doesn't have that quarterback in place to bring him in, right? And if Russell Wilson signs, it's $1 million. If he stinks, it doesn't work out. You didn't pay that much. You didn't trade for him, right? You didn't have to do any of that. You could bench him for Kenny Pickett again if you need to. Like, I'm all for it as a Steelers fan. A lot of Steelers fans are not for signing Russell Wilson. But for like $1 million this year, I don't see the downside. It reminds me of when the Colts signed Phillip Rivers, right? I was like, well, what's the worst that can happen? We can bench him. Like, he costs nothing. And he ended up being decent. They made the playoffs, right? You have a great defense in Pittsburgh. Russell Wilson's better than anything you have. You can still sign Mason Rudolph if you want, but bring in Wilson. It's going to upgrade the offense. Still going to run the ball. I don't know. I'm all for it. I think if you can't get Justin Fields, and I don't know if the Steelers are interested, I think Russell Wilson's probably the best way to go.
Are there any other teams that would make a lot of sense here? I figure Atlanta would be one.
I think Atlanta would make sense if they, if they're not in the field sweepstakes. They seem being the Kirk Cousins sweepstakes, to be honest, which I think is fine. I think Minnesota wouldn't be bad either if they need a bridge there, right? If you don't, because you have to sign Russell Wilson before you know what's going to happen in the draft. And if you're going to be able to draft one of these top four quarterbacks, really at this point for Minnesota, it's J.J. McCarthy or bust. I think signing Russell Wilson as a bridge quarterback who he could come in, you have great weapons. I don't think that's the worst thing either. They could be a playoff team with him. So I think if any team's kind of borderline playoff, Russell Wilson's a nice upgraded quarterback. It can get you there.
It's going to be interesting for sure to see what ends up happening there with Russell Wilson and where he ends up. It's one of those things. The quarterback dominoes, how are they falling here? Is going to tell the tale. It's going to be a big, especially right before the draft, right? And I don't know. I'm curious how the dominoes fall. Which domino falls first? Is it Justin Fields? Is it Kirk Cousins? Is it Russell Wilson? Which one falls first?
Yeah, I guess we'll find out. I mean, it feels – obviously, Kirk Cousins, you're going to have to wait for a free agency kind of to hit, which is coming. Zeke still could be that first domino, or at least we'll have the knowledge that he's going to someplace like Atlanta. Russell Wilson gets – I think he could take his time because he's so cheap, which makes a lot of sense. But the Fields deal, I think Bears have to get it done sooner rather than later, even if they don't have the market for Fields that they want. Trade him for a third-round pick if you have to. That might be it.
Interesting, interesting. All right. Let's bring out our guest, the returning champion, if you will. But now the last time we spoke to him, he is now the new college football managing editor for A to Z Sports. And he's a great friend of the show. He is our good buddy, Travis May. Travis, man, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, guys. Just talking some NFL Combine and some incoming rookies and things like that. All the hot topics right now. Thanks for having me as always. And feels like I'm on at least a couple times a year with you guys. And so always enjoy things.
Yep. First thing, I got to ask, this was your first time here in the homeland here of Mobile. You came down for the Senior Bowl, got to meet you and everything. Yeah. It was awesome. What was the experience like for you here in Mobile for the first time?
Yeah, the Senior Bowl was fantastic. This is actually A to Z's first time attending like a big kind of all in-person team to cover it as well. So it was great to just meet a bunch of my new coworkers because I just started as the college football managing editor. So it was lots of new faces, even just professionally for me, but just getting to be around all the players, coaches, scouts, awesome people like yourself. It was just great. Just making the rounds around the stadium and just hearing everyone's kind of individual, unique story where they come from. Because like everybody who's anybody, like within the league and media, like they all kind of come around Mobile, it seems like all the big names anyway, like the NFL Network and all the four and three letter networks have people there, their own side stages and all that. But even just like down to the photographers and hearing, you know, what they're working on. I learned a whole lot about specific prospects that were just being covered by specific photographers for all the agencies and stuff. Like I learned a lot more about the inner workings of draft season, I think, just by being there. So that was pretty cool.
Well, talking about stories, Travis, I enjoyed following your combine coverage on Twitter and on A to Z because you told a lot of the stories of the players. You were at the interviews. You were tweeting out video clips of some players. So give me your favorite kind of story or two, you know, even if it's not draft relevant, right? But you learned such interesting things about these prospects and where they came from, where they're going. What's one or two good stories that stuck out in your mind?
Well, I think if you followed along with what I did on the Twitter coverage, a few of the things that it's funny, like not even the big name stuff was what blew up the most, because you don't always get the most forthcoming details from them because they've like been trained to just share as little as possible in many cases. And they're trying to go through 150 people that are just all crowded around them asking questions in like a 20-minute window. But at Cody Schrader's podium, you know, because like there's a couple people like that are supposed to go way earlier in the draft that are like right next to him. So there's only like seven or eight people or whatever on his podium. And I step up there and I ask him about the journey from D2 ball, leading D2 in rushing to joining an SEC backfield and climbing up to inevitably become the SEC leader in rushing yards. And he gave me a good full like 2 minutes just talking through the story, his intentional strategy of getting there to the practice location and weight room area, you know, like at 5 a.m. in the morning, just so he could park in the middle of the lot where a strength coach would see his red Ford Ranger, just to get the attention of the coaching staff, and doing that consistently and earning trust over time. And it was cool to just kind of hear that journey and how he actually worked from no way should he have ever been in the conversation to even be at the NFL Combine to leading the SEC in rushing. So that was pretty cool. And then Trey Knox, I live in Middle Tennessee area. And so I'm very connected to I was actually like a character coach for the baseball team where he went to high school. And so I got to kind of pick his brain about, you know, the journey of, you know, starting out as wide receiver, changing to tight end, then inevitably transferring. And he kind of got emotional actually just sharing how difficult it was and how a few key coaches really have helped him get through it, including Dow Loggins, especially, who he actually followed to South Carolina. So that was really cool just to kind of get a few guys who weren't the most popular names to just have like a one-on-one, like and just have a kind of an intimate moment where they were opening up and sharing their story of how they actually got to the NFL Combine. And I think that's unique. Like I love that aspect of, you know, making it for these players. I'm the College to Canton podcast that I do with Stefan. We started that because like we were just enamored with the idea of the journey from beginning to end, from college recruit to through college to you know, to the pros, to what makes a Hall of Famer. The whole story is just intriguing to me. So to have a few guys really open up was pretty cool. Those two examples especially, but even like earlier round guys like Trey Benson, and now who probably will be an earlier guy. We can get to this in a second, but Marshawn Lloyd also just happened to get like, you know, several questions in and one-on-one time with them. And so that was kind of cool just to kind of learn more about the recovery from injury, you know, rehabbing and training and, you know, what it takes to actually prepare for the NFL Combine. I feel like I learned a whole lot from people who they're in the middle of it right now.
Marshawn Lloyd, man.
Yeah, man.
I want to talk about let's keep it on the combine here and something you tweeted out. I can't remember what day it was, but this is the fastest set of wide receivers in combine history. I think you said an average of 4.44 seconds in the 40, breaking the record of 4.47 average. That's wild. I mean, what do you think led to that? Or how did we get here?
You know, I think over the years, people have just gotten really good at optimizing speed and optimizing track preparation because and the athletes have improved slightly over the years. Like it's not vastly so, but like if you look at, you know, like the, you know, you guys had Mr. RAS himself, Kent Lee Platt, on here recently to talk about his RAS stuff, like dating back to 1987 to now. The difference, there's slight differences, not vast differences, but we're getting towards a point where people are just basically perfecting the 40-yard dash. And I think, you know, running backs who aren't even track athletes, you know, spend significant amount of time to just get the time down. And wide receivers, many of them are already track athletes. And so they're already kind of in that mode, you know, in high school before they get to this point. So they've been perfecting this process for quite some time. And this class was just really deep in terms of track athletes and that background specifically, as well as like size, speed kind of freaks that didn't even make sense for them to be that fast. So it's just a really deep class at the position. So it's just kind of the perfect storm. We're trending this way anyway. We're kind of getting to this point of 40-yard dash and sprinting optimization. And it's just the background of some of the players really kind of helps skew the results. And obviously it helps when one of the guys who's running runs a 4.21. So,
yeah, like it's not bad when Xavier Worthy gets to break the record. How'd that feel? Watching him break the record, being there, getting to kind of experience that'd be pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's hard to explain. You know, especially just because you know, like I've been rooting for Xavier Worthy since before he was even in college.
Right. We've been talking about him since he was in high school. So
forever, like you know, yeah, exactly. I mean, I remember you know sharing just something about him transferring from Michigan, like back in like April of his senior year, just because he was a big freaking deal, like one of the fastest players in the country coming into college as a receiver prospect. We already knew he was fast, but you know, because he missed the time in terms of like having his final track season, he didn't get to really prove it that he was like a, you know, like top tier speed as a track athlete, because he was, you know, prepping for college at the time. But to be there live, you know, when he kind of tipped his hand that it might be a possibility, you know, people were talking about, hey, is he actually going to do it? But when he ran that 4.25 on the first one, everyone freaked out already, because that was by far the best time of the day. And the crowd who had actually stuck around, because they had a special section there for fans, and it had really dropped off. It was, you know, like only a few hundred people had remained, but they erupted even on the 4.25. But, you know, as you're making your way around, oh, Xavier Worthy, oh, he's up again. And the whole place just gets quiet. And I'm sitting like 20 yards or so, like in the middle of the like second row from like the 40 yard finish line. And I'm just like, okay, this is it. I think he's going to do this. I'm like already prepping the tweet for when he's going to do this. Cause I'm like, he's got this. And so the whole place goes quiet. And when he kicks off the ground, like I'm close enough and it's quiet enough, I can hear you can hear it on TV, but like for you to be not even close to him and you hear him kick off, like you hear the grass from his like leave from his cleats. And when he crossed the finish line, it was just bonkers. The whole place, it sounded like it was a touchdown on a Sunday and it had been scored and there were 60,000 people there, but it was like just a bunch of media and a few hundred fans who were really tired and had just stuck around for hours just to see this happen. But it was cool. Wide receivers, you know, going all over him and stuff like that. I don't know how that looked on TV, but just a really, really cool moment.
I think it's awesome that they have the covered, the NFL Network coverage on in the, I guess, on the Jumbotron in the stadium. And he's able to see, like, immediately he had tied the record yes, before the official times come out. It's kind of like the Olympics, right? Because they can see immediately what their time is. And that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
While we're talking about Xavier Worthy, what's more impressive? Xavier Worthy breaking the record at 165 pounds, running 4.21, or Brian Thomas Jr., 46 pounds heavier, running a 4.34.
I can tell you that the more impressive feat was actually Brian Thomas Jr. Because there are measures that we have to kind of objectively state that it is more impressive. Like there are people who have put together various different like speed scores, but the one I use, he was like Brian Thomas Jr. was almost off the charts. Like he was like 98th percentile or something speed score, like top, you know, 10 to 15, whatever in the last 10 plus years, overall. Like it was a crazy class in terms of size adjusted speed, like him, Xavier Leggett, who you can brag about here in a second, and A.D. Mitchell as well. That trio, it's like you guys are all 205 plus pounds. You have no business being that fast. Like, what are we even doing here? So just absolute aliens, man. Like, it's just so impressive.
Yeah, we get what at 221 runs 4.39. Impressive. I'm not gonna victory lap it as much as I wanted to.
You already did today earlier in DM, so you got your you got your reward in.
It's good, good stuff, man. I know neither one of y'all are the biggest Xavier Leggett fans, and let's be honest, he's going to end up around wide receiver 9 on my board too when it all shakes out. But I'm just, you know, I'm happy for the guy. He seems like a good kid. We got to talk to him down at the Senior Bowl, and I'm pulling for him to have a good NFL career. I mean, dude's been through a lot. I saw a tweet thread went out today about all the stuff he's kind of went through in his life. So I'm pulling for him. Hope all is well. Shane, what you got?
Well, look, Travis, you and I are fantasy guys at heart. So let's pivot back to the running backs. Let's talk about some running backs that helped themselves. We've heard for how long, how bad this running back class is. It's a terrible class. You know, we saw Trey Benson, who you already mentioned, have a lot of success. We saw Jalen Wright with a great 40 time and a ton of good workouts. Who are some running backs, the guys I mentioned or others, that helped themselves that you think, hey, now we got – who are the solid kind of day two backs because of the combine here? I think you're muted there, Trev.
Rookie move. I go on so many freaking shows and I still do that. I don't know how many times. Like, I'm going to do – I'll go on 1,000 different shows. I'll still forget.
We do it too. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. It's a good question, though. So I built out this kind of custom A to Z Sports athletic composite to look through a few different lenses to kind of understand, okay, I have my expectations for these players, but I also want to understand, you know, what's good for their weight, what's good for their position, broke it down. And rather than just like say, hey, this is a – so-and-so speed score, this is a so-and-so burst score. I like to speak in terms of percentiles, right? Because that's something everyone can understand. And so adjusting for, you mentioned Jalen Wright. His size-adjusted speed score was fantastic. He not only ran a 4.38, we knew he was going to be fast. Like, the opening line on his props was like 4.32. That was way too aggressive. But he was really, really fast. And so even adjusting for his weight, Jalen Wright, that is, he had like a 92nd percentile speed score. And so at 210 pounds, running 4.38 is fantastic. Killed it in the jumps as well, 98th percentile in terms of burst when you look at both of his vertical and broad jumps kind of combined into one solid burst score when comparing all running back prospects back to like the year 2000. So in terms of his athletic composite, he was like 97th percentile, which is fantastic. So, and really the best among all guys who in all running backs in this draft that are projected to be, you know, round two, round three guys. The only other more impressive score was actually Isaac Garendo, former Wisconsin running back, who really helped improve his draft stock. He went from, you know, fringe undrafted free agent who took like 5 years or 6 years, whatever it was, to do anything. Like, I mean, he's been around a while. When he was Jonathan Taylor's backup, I think, back for 1 year. When he's a true freshman. So he's been around a minute, but to run, you know, what, 4.33 at 221 pounds is fantastic. But that was the only speed score that was better than Jalen Wright. So we knew he was really bursty. We knew when he hit the freaking minivan sized holes in Tennessee's offensive line, he could, you know, make a huge play. But I'd still have questions with him in terms of how the Tennessee offense just set him up for success. In terms of, you know, setting up those crazy lanes because of how wide the wide receiver splits are, because of how defenses have to play against them specifically versus anyone else that they do. But Jalen Wright certainly helped himself and seems like he was already rising, but now he certainly seems like he's in the mix for top three kind of running back capital in the draft, which is really impressive. So pumped to see that. And that's great news for A to Z Sports because we've got a lot of readers and people that like Tennessee. So that that was good for us. Good. But he was the obvious standout, but there are a couple other names for sure.
There you go. The Georgia fans in the house, not happy with that.
Sorry about that. Hey, look. Yeah.
You mentioned Isaac Garendo. I'd like to pat the old self on the back here for calling that fastest 40, at running back for Guerrero last week on the podcast.
Nice, man. Good call.
Great
call.
Look, he helped me. I bet it. So that worked out for me too. So thanks.
Oh, yeah. The wins all around. Wins, yeah, all around. I actually thought that it was going to be Guerrero had like a 100th percentile kind of speed score, adjusting for his weight. I thought that Trey Benson was actually going to be that guy because, maybe it's just I was a little biased because I'm super high on Trey Benson anyway. But when I was talking to him, in terms of like how he was saying, he was actually faster now than prior to his injury, which I thought was kind of crazy. But as he kind of talked me through it, he ran like a 4.5 or so when he was in high school, right? Trey Benson, that is. And he ended up going to Oregon, but he ended up tearing his ACL, MCL, and his meniscus. And he was talking about how hard it was because he lost over 20 pounds after that injury and had to basically rebuild everything, muscle mass, it's hard to come back from an injury. He just really took it hard. But in terms of preparation, he was saying that the injury in and of itself just helped him recover, helped him to focus on retraining strength, adding weight. It really made him a better man in terms of preparation. And so like in a way, he actually said the injury was the best thing that ever happened to him because it made him who he was today and really did make him faster because of how he kind of bounced back. And he ran like a 4.39, like 10 plus pounds heavier than he was in high school. So he's faster and bigger and stronger apparently than he was even prior to the injury. So really impressed by his bounce back and Marshawn Lloyd's bounce back from injury, kind of a similar story as well, and a transfer as well. But those are probably two of my favorites. Just had a lot of time to talk to them at the combine. Love their stories and bouncing back from injury, fighting through it. And Lloyd being one of 8+ yards per touch last year was crazy. So yeah, they both are firmly in the day two mix now.
Yeah. I'm still upset about Lloyd transferring, but I got it. Yeah. It worked out much better for him probably than it would have been if he had stayed. Let's stop talking about fantasy stuff. Who cares, right? Not like we have half our audiences or 75% of our audience is fantasy guys. Let's talk about offensive linemen. And
no, that's why I'm here.
Should we be concerned about Olufashanu only having 8.5-inch hands? I know this is an issue when we talk about quarterbacks, right? Does this matter for an offensive tackle?
I mean, it's nicer on paper if like you have, you know, your guy has boxing gloves with that boxing gloves on his hands. You know what I'm saying? Like there are a couple of guys that even like at the Senior Bowl, I remember looking at their measurables thinking, holy cow, this dude's a freaking monster. Like I remember standing next to and interviewing Brandon Coleman from TCU. And he had like a 7-foot wingspan and like almost 11-inch hands. And I was like, this is a massive human being. and so that's intimidating and all. And that's great, but I'm not really worried about Fashanu's hands. Like I've seen what he does with his hands, even if they are a little bit smaller. And it's just fine in my book. So I know that people had some questions there, but when you look at what I care about more so, or his arms, and he had like 65th, 66th percentile kind of arm length as well. So there's no questions there. So he's going to be able to reach out and punch people with his tiny little mitts just fine.
His hands are smaller than mine.
That is so weird. It is weird. And because like he's not a small dude. Like
no, it's 6'6", 312, right?
But yeah.
It's weird. I don't know that it matters, but it's weird. One more offensive line thing, and I'll let y'all get back to talking about important stuff. But what
Tanner Bordellini, right? That's who you want to talk about. Right?
Yeah.
I was actually right.
What about Joe Alt? Shane loves him some Joe Alt. What do you think about the basic identical size and workout comparisons to Lane Johnson? Does that work for you too?
Yes, it does. He's an interesting build, right? Because he's like 6'9", 321. And 321 sounds crazy, but like at 6'9", his BMI is only like 4th percentile. So he's just kind of a peculiar build. Like he's taller than everyone, but it will be interesting to see how he kind of adjusts to some guys who try to just get under him. And so he does fine with pad level, whatever, but he's an interesting build. I think when you look at him, when you stand next to him, you're like, oh my gosh, that's a freaking mountain. Yes. But he's not as thick, I guess, as like, almost anyone else there at the position.
Yeah, if he had not been so dominant in college, I'd be like, he's too tall. Like, I don't want my offensive tackle that tall. but his bend is so good that he can kind of use that to his advantage. I mean, he's been my offensive tackle one of the class since I think October of his true freshman year. So I haven't moved off yet. I guess I'm not doing it now, but yeah, it got to have the right fit or it could go south in a hurry, I feel like.
Yeah, he's my first tackle as well. And if the Titans don't go wide receiver, I hope that he's still available to be had there at the seventh slot for the Titans.
A lot of buzz during the combine broadcast about the Chargers at five.
That's worth. Yeah, and it's like, you know, they would be fine. He could play tackles. Tackles can play like either side. Like to be honest, like a lot of these guys have had to. I mean, Alt had a couple reps. Even, you know, playing on the right side, I'm sure he would be just fine. And actually Slater for the Chargers, who's been, who can be the left tackle. They actually played a lot of right tackle at Northwestern. So yeah, Northwestern. So like he might just be able to go back, you know, and be his own position, his own like natural position if Alt goes there. So that would be great, but not so much for my Titans if that's the target.
Could let a wide receiver fall to you if that's what you want, though. So,
which I'd be fine if they went to Dunze too, because they need to finally get some kind of good wide receiver play. Anyway, this isn't a Titans podcast, but
I guess fair. Let's go the other way. I think, you know, most guys like the Senior Bowl. I think at the combine, most guys help themselves, but there's always some disappointments, maybe players that hurt themselves. Timothy in the YouTube chat mentioned he expected better from Jermaine Burton from Alabama, the receiver. Is there anyone, Travis, stood out to you as the workout? Maybe it was the numbers, maybe it was the drills that just this didn't help them, and it could end up falling some rounds because of it.
Well, I think the most obviously glaring answer might be Audric Estime, just because he ran like a 4.7.
So yeah, 4.72. Yeah,
yeah, over a 4.7. So even when you adjust for his size, which he is a really thick dude, it's still like a 17th percentile speed score. His jumps were fine, but that doesn't really necessarily mean as much in terms of translating to predictive capital value. So he was a fringe, you know, day two pick at this point, and now he's just not. He's not going to go that early. So that's disappointing, but that's kind of where we are.
Very deja vu-ish with Kyron Williams from a couple cycles ago.
I mean, he was like 4.66 or something at the combine, 4.65 or something. He improved it at his pro day, but people don't think pro days count, even though the difference between 40 times at the combine and pro days has actually been decreasing in recent years because of, you know, better technology available. But I think Estime, you can't ignore those problems now. And then Bucky Irving came in super light and tested kind of poorly, which is surprising given how efficient he was at Oregon. And I still think he's very good at football, but his athletic composite's like ninth percentile because 5'9", 192, running like a 4.56, and not being bursty in his jumps. It was a little bizarre given what we see with our eyes on tape. It just didn't really fit. I didn't think he was going to be an absolute crazy burner, but kind of a rough day for him. Another guy who's probably out in terms of day two capital now. But those were kind of like the two most obvious fantasy football losers at the combine.
And I'll jump in here because, you know, you mentioned this in our league chat. I'll kind of connect it because both those players, especially Bucky Irving, but Estime as well, you know, I would have hoped for some agility testing, maybe like Kyron Williams did. You know, he aced the agility testing. So, you know, but you had some experience watching that agility testing at the combine. What was going on with the agility testing there? We've seen some problems in the past couple of years. Was it problematic again?
You know, first off, like, you know how Roma Dunze stayed super late to try to improve his time? Part of me thinks like, hey, I wonder if we get this TV crew focused on me doing this late, if they're going to do this stupid like fault thing. I know part of it with him was he kept hitting that cone and everything, but they were really weird, especially at the 20 shuttle. You know, if you're unfamiliar with the 20 shuttle drill, there's one cone in the middle. That's where the wide receiver or whoever it is starts. You sprint 5 yards to the side, touch the line, sprint 10 yards back, touch the line, and sprint back to the middle cone 5 yards. So it's, you know, it's 5, 10, 5, 20 yards in total. but they were very picky on like the turnaround, like where their feet were or something. Like it was really odd. They just kept on like stopping the wide receivers in the middle of their shuttle. And it wasn't just wide receivers, but they were that group in particular was the most frustrated. Like you could tell by their body language, and a few of them just gave up. Like I remember kind of like laughing because Ladd McConkey just walked away after he tried. It was several times he actually tried. He actually came back and tried it like one more time or whatever. And he just gave up. And I was like, looked it up later. I was like, maybe they're going to count one of those. And I don't think he actually counted a 20 shuttle time. So like Ladd McConkey was just so ticked. He was just like, I don't care. This is dumb. So like, that's not what he said or anything. It just looked like that's what he said with his body. Like, I was like, I cannot do this. I don't know if it's always that difficult, but it seemed like the people working that particular drill were just kind of pissing everybody off. So I kind of thought that was kind of funny. It was like right in front of me, off to the right, near the middle of the field, like at like the 20 yard line or whatever, where they were doing it. And it just was the goofiest looking thing.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the last thing they do after this. They've been there all day, right? And this is the last drill they're doing. So they're also super tired as well. I think that's a lot of the reason why a lot of players don't do it. Although I will say, you know, more players did it this year. It just looks that way anyway to me than did it last year at the combine.
Yeah, it is weird that they just like, hey, so you're going to do your vert, your broad, and then you're going to do your 40, and then you're going to do all these ridiculously fast in-breaking, out-breaking, vertical routes. And then after you've done all that and you haven't eaten in forever and you've been through interviews and like not slept enough, hey, by the way, just be as agile as you possibly can. it is a little odd.
I feel like they should just move this to the next day with the bench press, like they do, like they started doing the bench press the day after, like maybe do the agilities on the same day as the bench press.
Yeah.
Maybe you get more participation. I don't know. But participation in the bench press has gone down as well. So maybe not.
I get why people don't do it now. Like having been there and see, just watching it in person, like, what, you just did all this and now, like without really even having a break, like, hey, just, you know, just go sprint and turn and, you know, bend.
But it makes you respect the guy that ace it though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like when like JJ McCarthy shows up, like, hey, I'm just going to make like, you know, top 10 three cone time all time, just like first try or whatever, which is just pretty insane. It wasn't first try, but it was pretty quick. Pretty incredible. So yeah, it makes it all the more impressive when people can actually compete in every single part of the on-field and then go out and do the agility tests. Yeah, definitely impressive. I couldn't, that's for sure. Well, I could. I would just be very slow. I'll say that.
that's fair. Yeah, we could all do it. We just, there's no limit to how much time it would take.
Yeah.
Travis, last thing, and I'll let you go. One player that we haven't talked about that you immediately went back to the hotel room or when you got back home and said, all right, I'm back to the tape. I missed something. What performance was so good that you had to go back and watch tape?
Oh, man. Probably Theo Johnson, and a tight end of Penn State, just because I understood, like, Penn State, all they do is crank out ridiculous athletes, even when they don't look like they're great athletes on the field. You know, because of oftentimes their tight ends are just these massive human beings who are just really long striders. I think that messes me up sometimes when I'm watching these guys. He just did not look as fast as he was on tape. You know, when you're watching him play, he's got kind of heavy feet. He's 260 pounds, 6'6", 260 pounds. And so you think, of course, that guy's not 4.57 fast. But then you look at it afterwards, you're like, holy cow, he had a 95th percentile speed score when you adjust for his weight. He had his burst score was like 97th percentile. And even his agility tests were a 77th percentile for a guy at 260 pounds. That shouldn't be possible. And so I was like, man, what in the world did I miss? Because it doesn't necessarily show up all the time. But then when I went back and looked, it was like, okay, it does in subtle ways, because he shouldn't be able to get back up to speed as well as he does. Like, and that's what I think I miss oftentimes. When he does punch somebody in the mouth with his huge hands and all his size, he does get back up to speed really quick. And I just kind of was missing that when I was watching him. But even in interviews, and after I was talking to teams that were interested in him, talking to reporters of other teams, like, hey, just trying to gauge interest after the fact. And I realized, man, over half the league is meeting this guy for formals. Even guys who kind of have the position figured out, like at the 49ers, he had a great formal with them. The Chiefs had a great formal with them. Like, how awesome would it be if, like, he was the heir apparent to some kind of huge role in the NFL behind one of the greats? And when you test, like, Jimmy Graham, like, he was almost identical testing wise to Jimmy Graham. Just a shade shorter, of course. So I wouldn't be surprised if he was actually the second tight end off the board at this point.
Wow. That's huge. I've had some Theo Johnson Devy shares from when he was in high school, so I guess I can be hopeful for that.
Yeah. But that's got to be it. And then the guy who should be a tight end, Johnny Wilson. He was just one. I was like, how is it? Because he doesn't look like he's that fast, but his 27 feet his strides just eat up a bunch of ground, apparently. So definitely had to go do a double take with his testing as well. But before I go, do you guys actually want him to convert to tight end? Because I kind of do. I really do.
I mean, it's not going to happen. So
no, I mean, I think he's going to be – he could play that Jimmy Graham role that he played in New Orleans, where he essentially never blocked, right? So yeah. He's just a big slot, right? And I think that's what Johnny Wilson could end up being. It's just a big slot.
Yeah. Because, you know, he was alternating routes with Ben Sinnott at the Senior Bowl, going against, like, some safeties and bigger body guys. It's like teams wanted to see him do that. So I don't know. Just be interested to see if he does go that way eventually. You know, adds 5 pounds, and still he's probably a 4'6" guy adding 5-7 pounds. So I'd love to see how that works out. Brian's like, absolutely do not believe that Johnny Wilson should move to tight end. Hey, I'm just selfishly thinking for fantasy football purposes. Sorry. Because, like, I don't project Johnny Wilson to be like a 1,500-yard wide receiver, but if he's a 900-yard tight end, sign me up. So selfish there in terms of my projection a little bit. But anyway.
Travis, man, I appreciate you coming on almost sort of last minute. Got you to come on and fill in, man. And just I can't thank you enough for sharing what your experiences to combine with us, and talking about your first experience in Mobile, and just all this knowledge that we had. You said you needed to get some of it out of your head, so I hope we helped in that regard.
Thank you. Yes, thank you very much. There's so much more. I'm trying to publish even more now. This week at A to Z, just, you know, updated all the positional ranks and try to get some intel in there with a few, like, interesting notes from players that met with certain teams that it seems like they're leaning towards being more of like a target coming out of the NFL combine week. So I'll be doing a little bit more of that, but I really appreciate you guys having me on, and anytime, and enjoy the rest of NFL draft season. Cause that's kind of what you guys do here. Right.
And it's what we do. it is what we do. Travis, nice. Man, again, thanks a lot. And we'll chat you up again soon.
Thanks, guys.
That was Travis May from A to Z Sports, the new managing editor of college football over there. Be sure and go read all that good stuff that he's been putting out as well.
Yeah, some real good, some of the pieces on the individual players, like, awesome over there. So well worth checking out.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Big performances that we saw last week. Like I said, I patted myself on the back a little bit with the Isaac Garendo thing. I basically watched him play one game this year, but he was just breaking off big run after big run. I'm like, hey, that guy's fast. Maybe he can do it.
Yeah, Louisville running back. I mean, what did his RAS end up? 9.98. So
yeah, it's
pretty much the third best running back.
Yeah, there was Kent thought that his agilities had came in better, which I think he did. Yeah, he did do the agilities. If his agilities had come in better, he could have passed the great Justin Fargus as the top running back of all time in combine history. But
good to be the most athletic running back in the past 20 years. Isn't bad. So, yeah, I don't know if that quite shows up on tape, this type of athleticism, but usually, if you're this athletic, yeah, you get a shot in the NFL to play, and you do decently. So I think it'll be a good day.
The speed shows up on tape. He still has some vision issues, if you will, as far as if the hole is there, he's going to take it. I don't know that he's going to create much of his own space. Special teams, I think, is going to be a where he's Isaac Grindo is going to be make some big time money at the next level. All right, so last thing we're going to talk about tonight is Bob McGinn. Used to be a writer for, I believe, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Is that correct? Back in the day, he was on the Packers beat for the longest time, but is well connected. Released a top 55 today. It had you a buzzing on the Twitter this morning. First of all, tell everybody why they should take what Bob McGinn says and listen.
Like Bob McGinn's the most accurate NFL draft predictor in the world since Rick Gosling gave it up from the Dallas Morning News. Like Bob McGinn has been doing this since 1973. He's well connected, was connecting with low-level scouts in 73 who, you know, rose up the charts and became GMs and high-level executives. And so now he has those people and who are everyone under them. So he's super well connected. Bob McGinn doesn't watch tape. Bob McGinn doesn't watch anyone. He just gathers information. He's won the top 100 contest at the Huddle Report 5 times. You know, his mock drafts are always on point as well. Like he's been highly successful at the NFL draft game. He comes out with his 9-part series. He did it forever. The Milwaukee, Sentinel. And has continued to do it. And, you know, last year, my tweet blew up doing the same thing, really, just saying what was in his article about the S2 scores and CJ Stroud score, right? And Bob McGinn's like, hey, here's the scores. Like, I know it. Someone told him, and here's the information. That's what he does. And he's never done it this early. And this is the first time we've kind of gotten information from scouts in March, February, March, about these players.
And you can read that article. Is it Go Long TD? Is that correct?
Yeah, .com.
GoLongTD.com. So go there and read it. But some definite interesting things jumped out, and we'll talk about a couple of them before we go here. Very interesting what he had to say about J.J. McCarthy, right? The quarterback from Michigan.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was not positive in terms of J.J. McCarthy, right? And these are the old anonymous scout quotes that, you know, he's putting out here. Right. And so he's always said like, he's always said that he's going to post kind of what's legitimate, what these scouts are thinking, what they're talking about. And so, you know, we got that for J.J. McCarthy, and it seems like a lot of the same concerns that are popping up for people that Michigan was kind of hiding J.J. McCarthy and his talent. You know, how are you going to take a guy that only is throwing 15 times a game? They ran the ball, they played defense. I don't think he's that talented. And two scouts separately compared him to Jim Harbaugh as a quarterback, right? They're like, this is why Harbaugh loved him. He's just, you know, tough, smart, but not overly skilled or talented. He's just really tough, and you know that's it. So we'll see if it comes to fruition. I still think, but I think what this says is maybe J.J. McCarthy, we're going to hear, oh, he's going to go top 10. It's going to go quarterback 1, 2, 3, 4. We've heard that. We heard that last year with Will Levis. Maybe J.J. McCarthy's more a Will Levis type situation than this is going to be the first time in NFL history that we have 4 quarterbacks go in the top 9.
You also in that quote here, I sent it to you on our Discord, I thought was very interesting for my own edifice here. I don't know if it was one scout or multiple scouts said that Bo Nix is significantly better than J.J. McCarthy, and I like Spencer Rattler better than both of them.
Yeah, that was one scout. Spencer Rattler did not make the top 55 list. Let's be frank.
Give that scout a raise, by God.
Well, if some team drafts Spencer Rattler over Bo Nix and J.J. McCarthy, then then I guess we'll know what team he's a scout for.
Brian Lamb, was that a former NFL
scout? No.
I think this guy's still a current NFL scout. Jeez.
The one thing that I just stood out to me was talking about tight ends, and was that obviously Brock Bowers is tight end one. That's not a question. But the number two tight end that he had inside his top 55, and the only other tight end, was Jared Wiley from TCU.
Who's not getting a lot of pub. After the tight end drills the combine, I moved him up to tight end 4, which I was like, it feels a little rich. But maybe not. He looked really good. Maybe not. So no Jatavion Sanders in that top 55, right? No Ben Sinnott, no Theo Johnson, as Travis just said, could be the second tight end off the board. Yeah, Jared Wiley, 6'6", 249. I mean, productive. He's a pass-catching tight end purely, even at that size. And that's kind of what the scouts quotes, talked about with him, was his pass catching and just, you know, how good he is at that, which I thought was interesting. So, yeah, I did not expect – that was probably my biggest surprise, I think, of the article, was seeing Jared Wiley. Here's a good quote. He is the underwear model cover, is what they said about Jared Wiley.
Oh, there you go. And maybe I should ask this when Travis was on. It feels like the bloom is off the rose on Texas tight end Jatavion Sanders just a little bit after that combine the other day. Not the great.
The drills were rough, and I thought the workout was fine, but you expected better. I mean, you thought that he was going to come out and maybe ace it. I could see day two, we get like another 3-4 tight ends. We're like, well, what's going on? Or I could see us just no Brock Bowers and nothing till day three could happen. Maybe. Too.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, but I will say this. My new big board, post-combine board, is going to drop on Sunday, and JT Sanders will not be my tight end two when that board drops.
Interesting.
Leave that there. Anything else that stood out to you in the McGinn piece?
There's some good things if you get a chance. I mean, it's worth the $8 a month to pay for March and then pay for April and get his 9-part series. I mean, it is worth $16 if you're into the draft to get that. I thought running back was interesting. Trey Benson's a top 40 pick. One scout said that Jonathan Brooks, and if he wouldn't have gotten hurt, would be a first-round pick. So maybe this running back class, they're the only two in the top 55, but, like, there's two running backs in the top 55. I think that's pretty significant in this class.
Very, very interesting. Last thing before we get to a couple questions that we have, was the Troy Franklin wide receiver from Oregon, was that the worst gauntlet drill in the history of the combine?
It was close. It was at least close.
That man looked like one of them fan graph things when the score kept changing, and it's just up down, up down, up down as he was running through. Horrible.
There was a bad one a couple years ago. I can't remember who it was that I was like, it's pretty bad. But yeah, I mean, Franklin was not attempting to go in a straight line and just trying to catch everything. But it's interesting because I think watching it, you're like, that's bad, right? And we saw Keon Coleman got a lot of praise because his top speed was the best in the drill. Keon Coleman ran so fast, he stopped catching balls. He didn't catch the last ball. He outran it so he could run fast. Like, he failed the drill. That was a failed drill, in my opinion. So I think you got to be careful on what is good, what is bad. But yeah,
frankly, you know who didn't fail the drill?
Lad McConkey did not feel that.
They put that the telestrator on his or whatever the trailer, and that thing, man, you couldn't draw a straight line better with a ruler and a pen on a piece of paper than what McConkey did on that gauntlet drill and caught every ball. Wild. All right, yeah. Let's get to some questions here. We had a couple. We had none on Twitter, I don't believe. None in the Discord, but we do have a couple here in the chat.
couple YouTube ones, yeah.
Yep, let's go back to AB. Sent a question from a Steelers fan. Looks like they're focusing on tackle, center, defensive line, and wide receiver for their early picks. Is there a safety that can be drafted on day three that we think can start?
I think there's a couple, you know, for the Steelers to be the opposite of Minkah Fitzpatrick, I think that would be interesting. Kitten Oladipo from Oregon State, I think would be intriguing. Right, you know, 6'2", 216. He was a 4.42 guy. You know, they definitely want that speed, even at the strong safety spot. But he has that weight to him. I think he'd be interesting. Not sure if there's anyone else that Tyke I feel.
Smith from Georgia.
Yeah, Tyke Smith would fit that bill too.
Big, you know, good speed for a guy that'll come down and hit you.
Yeah, good speed. Probably a little short, but he could be good.
A guy I think, and we talked about it before we came on the air. I have not been in love with his process, the Senior Bowl or the Combine. And should he fall into that mid fourth round area where the Steelers will be picking, Cameron Kitchens from Miami would fit that bill as well. I think I think he's in for a fall. You're less trepidatious on that than I am, but Kitchens I think could be in line there.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kitchens could be a starter. I think he proved that. I think he still goes day two, but he could fall to round four. We did see Omar Khan for the Steelers. I think every pick except one was Green Raz last year. So the new GM might be in that high Raz category for the Steelers.
Timothy had a question. I guess when Travis was talking about formal interviews and informal interviews, what determines if an interview is formal or informal?
It's a fair question. I mean, pretty much if you hear about an interview, it's going to be a formal interview. You know, at the combine, teams just kind of get a certain amount of players that they can interview and sit down with. That's not to say that they don't exchange words with a player. You know, the Senior Bowl, they interview every player in kind of more informally. Combine, there's a set formal interview status. They might talk to a player here and there. It's the coach on the field. That's more informal.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of like it used to be at the Senior Bowl before they structured it the way it was. Like, you would go on the field after practice and you would see a scout or talking to a player or whatever. That would classify as an informal interview, where at night they would have the formal interviews with the players. Same thing at the combine. Like you said, they get a set number of players to talk to. And if they just happen to grab a guy in the hallway or whatever, that would be the definition of an informal interview, where they're just gathering information. Andrew wants to know, what do we think of Brock Bowers?
Great. Stud. Look, I tweeted it now. It's been a year and a half that he's going to be what Kyle Pitts was supposed to be, because you have Brock Bowers and he scored 5 rushing touchdowns in his career, right? He's a versatile weapon, unlike what Pitts was at Florida. I think that's going to benefit Bowers to really be a receiver, a blocker, running the ball. He's going to do everything, and I think that makes him really attractive.
Bowers didn't work out at the combine, but he did ace the first part of the combine, right, when he measured in, because we were speculating here on the show. We thought he might come in at 6'1", 6015, something like that. He ends up going over 6'3", 6031, 243 pounds. Hand size is there, good arm length, good wing. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, he blocks, he runs, he catches. He's one of the best yak guys in this draft at any position, wide receiver or tight end. Bowers is going to be a stud. Could go anywhere from the 5th overall pick to the 20th. I mean, his draft range is wild at this point.
That's how tight ends go. I don't know if you've had a tight end where you felt good, like, oh, they're going 10 to 15, you know. It's tough to make that fit of will teams invest. The 243, we'll see what he comes in this pro day. I think that might be a little fake.
Yeah. Maybe we get about 237 at the pro day, right? Where and that's, again, that is next Wednesday. So we'll see him, see his testing. Hopefully we'll get some test numbers on Brock Bowers there too, see how freaky he really is. Yeah, I said what I said. All right. So Jacob T., I keep hearing Harrison Jr. versus Neighbors. Is there actually a debate for wide receiver 1?
Well, that's funny, because it's literally like the first thing in the Bob McGinn piece that we were talking about. a scout. Let me see if I can find the exact quote here. Basically said about Neighbors, he's not Harrison. If you see that he's better than Harrison, just ignore it, was the statement. Harrison's wide receiver one. I think it's clear. I think there's more of a debate probably between Neighbors and Roma Dunze for a lot of people. I like Neighbors significantly more, but I think that debate is probably stronger for NFL teams than Harrison versus Neighbors.
I agree. Dunze did absolutely nothing to dispel that argument, right? If anything, he made it. Neighbors didn't even weigh in. I mean, he refused to weigh in at the combine along with Jaden Daniels, which is just weird to me. But, you know, it is what it is. But Neighbors and I like Odunze. I have on this, talked about him on the show a lot. But no, I'm with you. I don't think there's much debate here at all. I think it's Marvin Harrison Jr. And then Malik Neighbors, and Odunze is close. Yeah. Last question here from Buccaneer Bruce. Do you think Sione Vaki is a day three pick? Yes, but where? At what position? Is Sione Vaki a day three pick, Shane?
Sione Vaki's a safety. I mean, you're not drafting him as a running back. If you get caught in a pinch and need to put Sione Vaki, the Utah safety.
Pigskin Paul would draft him as a running back.
Yeah, well, that's the reason Pigskin Paul's not running an NFL team at his age, right? Sione Vaki's on my top 10 safeties. I think the versatility, 210 pounds. He ran a 4.62. He's tough. He can hit. Is there a chance he goes round three? I don't think it's out of the question if a team really likes that versatility and character. But, I think round four, round five, you could do a lot worse than Vaki. You're going to get an elite special teams player with upside to be a starter.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think definitely the special teams. And that's what your day three is all about for a lot of these guys, right, especially. And I think that's where he's going to come off the board, somewhere in that fourth round area, early fifth round, I think is where we're going to see Vaki come off the board. All right, so that's going to do it for tonight's show. Final thoughts, Shane. Pigskin Paul mentioned him and Jess there, but he did have a mock draft come out on Monday. Interesting stuff there. And you will have another big seven rounder coming up this Monday.
Yeah, this will be my post-combine mock draft. So I've been starting to piece it together a little bit and see what fits. I want to try to not get that safe tag on the mock draft database. So I'm going to try to switch this not a lot, but I'm going to switch some things up here for the seven rounder this time.
Love it. Let's make Denny work a little bit over there. All right. We got a lot of team mock drafts coming up over the next few weeks. Raider Nation come out tomorrow. Brad Menendez will have a Raiders seven-round mock coming up, and Pigskin Paul will have one for the Dallas Cowboys coming up on Friday. But Saturday, Shane, Kansas City Chiefs mock draft. But Miranda Wilhelm compares every Chiefs pick in the mock draft to a Taylor Swift song, baby. Swifties come out in force for the Kansas City Chiefs seven-round mock on Saturday.
Yeah, hey, I like it. I went to the Eras Tour this summer, so I'm excited to read it.
Shane, notorious Swiftie over there.
Yeah, look, my wife is. I enjoy the music. The concert was an experience. It was awesome.
I'll say this: when I edit this piece, I will hear more Taylor Swift songs than I ever have in my life.
I'm excited for you. You're gonna like a couple. I think you're gonna get into it.
We'll see. We'll see. But also on Sunday, as I mentioned earlier, my top, screw it. We're going 300 this one. I'm going 300, Shane.
I'm going like I don't want to one up you, but I'm going 350. So, but 300 is pretty good at this point.
I've been going up in increments of 50, man. So
you've been doing good.
I might get up to 400 by the draft. We'll see. Right, yeah, but, top three. Yeah, top three.
350 was pushing it for me too. Yeah, so that's fine. Right.
That's going to do it for tonight's episode of the Draft Countdown Podcast. As always, if you're new to the channel, if you come by on Twitter tonight, and by God, that number up there is a lot of you tonight. Go to the YouTube channel and subscribe. Do that. Do us a favor. Do us a solid on that. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the notification bell so you get notified when we go live each and every week.
If you listen to this on an audio platform, be it Spotify or Apple Podcast, go there, leave us a five-star review, share that out as well. You can always, as always, follow us on Twitter or X if you're into the new lingo. Follow me at Deep Fried Draft. Follow Shane at Shane P. Howell. Follow Draft Countdown at Draft Countdown. And as always, go to draftcountdown.com for all of your daily NFL draft needs. For Shane, I'm Brian. Good night, everybody.